All presentations are provided for informational purposes only. They do not serve as an invitation or encouragement to participate in any investment activities. If you are considering making an investment, you should seek appropriate financial advice. What you're about to listen to is an audio recording of a presentation originally broadcast on our platform. As such, sometimes presenters might refer to graphs, images, or videos. For the original presentation and much more, check out our website at investormeetcompany.com. Apologies for the interruption. Back to the presentation.
Good morning and welcome to the Ferrocreeve PLC half-year results investor presentation. Throughout this recorded presentation, investors will be in listen-only mode. Questions are encouraged and they can be submitted at any time using the Q&A tab situated on the right-hand corner of your screen. Simply type in your questions and press send. The company may not be in a position to answer every question it receives during the meeting itself. However, the company can review all questions submitted today and publish responses where it is appropriate to do so. Before we begin, I would like to submit the following poll, and I would now like to hand you over to CEO Hugh Jones. Good morning to you.
Thanks, Alex, and good morning, everybody. Thanks for attending our half-year report Investor Meet webinar. With me here in London is our Chair, Alistair, our CFO, Tony, and our COO, Helen. We're very excited. We've come mob-handed because we're very excited about the progress we've made in a relatively short period on our now lead asset. But before we start in earnest, we are a public company, we're AIM listed, because the usual disclaimers will apply. So to remind you then, first, before we get to the news that has excited us greatly in this half year, we'll remind you of who we are. We're AIM listed, TCF.L. We're a brain-focused biotech with a relatively recent, at the start of this period, refocus. So the key areas for us now are addiction, very certainly with our OX1 or orexin-1 blocker, an antagonist of the orexin-1 brain system. It's completely novel. Patents are granted across the world. It's suitable because it switches off a fundamental network in the brain in a number of different addictive conditions, so-called substance use disorders. And those substances are food, alcohol, and certain drugs. And we're funded with this program as a result of a raise we did at the beginning of the year when Alistair joined us to clinic readiness. What does that mean? We're funded through the last stage of preclinical research and development to get us ready to give to man by quarter three, four of next year. And we're really excited about the progress we've made and the capital efficiency that's come in to that process. We have another asset which was targeting fatigue and narcolepsy, shorthand, we call it DAT. It's a dopamine modulator that we are pretty keen on bringing to your attention. And then there's the legacy program in SFX01, which is a grant-funded program in brain cancer. We're virtual. Majority of the operational team are sitting in front of you. There's a few more. We're highly capital efficient. And if you measure us by the number of months remaining on the cash runway, we're in the top 20% of all listed European biotech companies. That means we've got a very long runway relative to our peers. The business model then is to develop to early proof of concept as early as possible before monetizing the asset. That could be preclinical, more likely early clinical data, and then license out our assets to large pharma and large biotechs so they can take on the large scale trials and the commercialization of our novel assets. The team in front of you, plus the board and the other members of management, have a couple of hundred years combined experience of doing this, of developing high-value assets and monetizing them in drug development, in management, in funding, and in M&A activity, all key aspects of the job that we need to do as a small-cap biotech. I'll hand over to Alistair now, our chair, to talk a little bit about why he joined again and a bit about the opportunities that Ferrocreeve has to offer.
Thanks, Hugh. Yeah, well, morning, everyone. It's great to take the opportunity, I think, to talk you through, you know, what I saw in the company, the strategic focus that we went through when I came on board, and why I think there's a really strong investment opportunity and investment case. As Hugh mentioned, when I joined, we had a strategic review of the opportunities to deliver shareholder value and something I'm going to talk about in a minute is delivering that shareholder value on a short timescale. It's not all about jam tomorrow, a biotech story of 10 years from now. There are opportunities to deliver significant shareholder value through the development of the assets that Hugh's mentioned. So that was a very important review, I think, that reset the company's focus and allowed us to really focus on the key assets that I'll focus on in the next couple of slides. So as Hugh mentioned, the lead program is focused around addiction. And it won't, I guess, come as any surprise to anybody that addiction is enormously costly, both in human terms, you know, in terms of the deaths. You can all read the figures there. I don't need to go through them all, but the deaths and the shortening of life due to various addictions, you know, the obvious ones that you can think of, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, food and binge eating, which you'll see along the bottom. If you look at the economic costs, not just the human costs, but the economic costs, and this really drives the commercial interest, of course, the economic costs just in the UK. So these figures are just in the UK, run into many, many billions due to a range of different addictions. And of course, that is what drives the commercial interests in new and improved treatments for these types of disorders. So, you know, that has driven a significant resurgence in what we call CNS central nervous system disorders in the last few years. And again, you can read the slide. I don't need to talk through all of those, but there are some very, very significant deals done for companies and assets that have novel, innovative, improved approaches to treating disorders. And large pharma has renewed interest in CNS. It was an area that I think was very quiet for a decade or so, but now is a very hot area and a hot topic. So really that sort of, you know, those sorts of deals on that previous slide that I just spoke about, you know, those are what most people hold in their heads as the, you know, why am I investing in a biotech? And they think about these long-term ultimate buyouts, ultimate sales of assets. But as I say, one thing I really wanted to stress today is there are much shorter term returns for shareholders. And this, you know, this slide on the right-hand side does sort of reflect those total deal values through licensing of the types of assets that Hugh and Helen will talk about in a moment, our lead treatment for addiction. The total deal value includes royalties over a period of time and so on. But what I think is more interesting to make my point that there is a biotech value curve where shareholders can receive a significant return on a much shorter time scale. If you look at the graph on the left, preclinical is the stage that we are currently at. We are in fact at advanced preclinical stage, as Hugh mentioned, looking to be clinic ready next year. And those are the upfront payments received for assets in that preclinical phase of development, exactly where we are now. And in phase one, which would be the first phase of clinical development, as I'm sure you're sure, roughly double the value. So that also explains to you why the strategy very often is to take assets into the clinic to really get that improved value for shareholders through having that clinical stage asset. And to really make the point, I think, as clearly as possible, and these are all in US dollars, of course, to make them comparable, you know, the current market cap of Therapriff is a fraction of the sorts of deal upfronts that we can expect for our lead program. So I think that really sets the scene for the investment case that I saw when I came in February. You know, and the very quick one-line summary is a class-leading treatment for addiction, heavily de-risked because we're very close to the point of getting to clinic readiness. So the lead program that Hugh and Helen will talk about is an antagonist, something that blocks a biological pathway in the brain known as orexin-1, and that is known to affect addiction behavior. So that's not a, you know, might it work, might it not work. It is known to be effective in the treatment of these reward-seeking behaviors. In the preclinical studies that we already have in hand, so this is data we already have, we've clearly shown that it has our drug has best in class properties, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through the presentation. Furthermore, the program's heavily de-risked, as I mentioned, by having a very large body of data developed over many years, but both in Therapriff and in Kronos, where we acquired the asset from. And it's a pretty short path now, less than a year to being clinic ready for phase one studies. And I would say also the de-risking given by colleagues sitting here on my left, the huge amount of experience of taking this process through successfully into clinical development is obviously very comforting. So CNS, as I mentioned, has enjoyed a massive level of renewed interest from large pharma. And I would say that and certainly what I saw when I joined in February was the potential of this orexin-1 asset alone, let alone anything else that's in the pipeline and other opportunities. The orexin-1 asset alone, the value of that is not reflected in the current valuation of the business. So I think that's about as strong an investment case as I've seen for any company that's come across my desk in the recent past. With that, I will hand over to Helen, if I may.
Thanks, Alistair. So just to talk a bit more in detail about the prioritised pipeline we now have for the CNS disorders. Our orexin-1 blocker, we have a wealth of preclinical data, which really underpins our confidence in this programme. And our beachhead indication will be binge eating disorder. This is a very well understood clinical development path, and it's actually something that's got a lot of interest currently with GLP-1s progressing into the clinic. However, the differentiated mechanism we provide, we believe, will address those addictive properties that satiety alone is not going to touch. And to remind you of some statistics that we've talked about previously, the majority of patients with binge eating disorder are not overweight or obese, they're of regular weight. So we don't want to stop them from eating normally, we just want to control their substance seeking behavior. Of course, we have expansion opportunities for indications. It's well known that the orexin system is overstimulated, so upregulated in other substance use disorders. And what we're doing with inhibiting this orexin system is we're bringing it back down to normal levels. So we are looking to go into alcohol use disorder as an expansion opportunity, and also other addictive disorders, opioid use disorder, a very, very large market, especially in the US, and cocaine use disorder. Where we see the value of our program amongst the competitor environment is really we have a potential class-leading compound, and with that we have significant differentiation. So by class-leading, that will be ultimately more efficacious, so it provides a better effect for patients, and it will have less side effect potential. So we're able to control that addiction without any other negative effects. As I said, we don't want to stop people enjoying everyday activities or create what's commonly known as anhedonia. We have a fantastic profile for our compound. It's very, very important. We have high selectivity for the orexin-1 receptor over orexin-2. And that's because if we hit the orexin-2 receptor, we'll be sending patients to sleep. And we really don't want to do that. And that was a big challenge for other pharma developers in this area, where they actually failed to get products through the clinical trials because they saw sedation in patient populations. We have as yet the most selective compound discovered, so we believe that we won't see this liability when we get to our clinical studies. So our next CNS program is a dopamine modulator. This is also a fantastic commercial opportunity. So the beachhead indication here is for fatigue in multiple sclerosis, and that's because a large proportion of patients with MS suffer with debilitating fatigue, so much so that they go to their clinician and they ask for help. And irrespective of whether they're having a flare within their MS condition or they're being dosed with other products that actually contribute to that fatigue, around 80% of all patients have an issue with what we call central nervous system fatigue. So that's not just I've been to the gym and I'm very tired. This is a terrible debilitating fatigue where they just struggle to kind of get out of bed or interact with sort of daily living. So we believe we can provide an opportunity here for a first approved drug for MS patients with fatigue, providing them with relief and less side effects than other products that are currently used off-label, so that's products that don't have approval in this indication. Of course, fatigues of brain origin give us a large expansion opportunity also. We have things like chemotherapy-induced fatigue states. I think everyone's aware of the issues with long COVID disorder, but also other indications such as narcolepsy, where we contribute to alertness, but with less potential side effects. So this unique mechanism is really driven by a high selectivity for a dopamine transporter. That means that we can raise dopamine levels gradually without a stimulant-like effect. So as a stimulant-like, amphetamine would be a really negative side effect in this medication. And we believe we have a really differentiated opportunity here with the dopamine modulator.
Thanks, Helen. Now to the substance of the report we want to deliver to you. So at the start of the period, we pivoted, we changed strategy and raised money around that strategy to, with Alistair's encouragement and backing, changing to a strategic focus on our orexin-1 antagonist. Why do this? There's a question that's come up about this. Why do it? Well, we look at these, we weigh these questions really heavily. We think, what is the best chance of technical success? What's going to get there? What's going to get to a meaningful readout in the clinic? What's going to get to the sort of deal values that Alistair outlined in the investment opportunity? So that you combine the market size, the chance of success, and the chance of getting serious monetization over a near-term series of milestones for any one asset in your portfolio. And that's what we went through. We went through a serious strategic review, and what came out was the OX1 asset we acquired the year previously. Why? Because it's got the best chance of success. It's a heavily de-risked program. It's got the best chance of a substantial deal and some near-term milestones associated with it. What we've done in the period is made a huge progress towards the clinic in the last 6 months to the 30th of September. Real progress to the use in the clinic with the asset that we prioritized. It's on track for a regulatory submission at the very latest in the fourth quarter of next year, with lots of other interim steps which are newsworthy on the way to getting regulatory submission. How do we do this? Well, we are a virtual company, as you know, so we appointed a top-tier global CRO, contract research organization, CDMO, contract development and manufacturing organization called Pharmaron, and with two levels of intense management by Theracreve. Pharmaron are undertaking the manufacturing, toxicology, and the key development steps in finalizing the dossier needed to get permission to give this to humans. And that's very, very well ahead and with remarkable capital efficiency. I've been doing this 40 years. I have to say this is one of the most efficient, most successful programs at this stage I've ever been associated with. It's going very, very well, thanks to our team and the work being done at Pharmaron, our provider. Manufacturing is on or slightly ahead of schedule, actually. We scaled up to 0.5 kilogram, which is a large amount, from lab quantities, test tube quantities, through to kilogram quantities, and that came in early. We rushed to put an RNS out to say that we had scaled up the 0.5 kilogram early. 10 kilograms is on track. That's a very substantially greater amount of drug that we're manufacturing. And we're learning a lot about the manufacturing process as we do so, making it more efficient, eventually cheaper to make, which is a key thing for all potential drugs. And these are critical activities, and the way you do these, the way you improve the formulation, the way you improve the efficiency of production are all critical factors for the regulatory submission we'll be making mid next year to late next year. We've worked very hard on formulations, the way that you add things to the drug to make it, for example, more absorbable in the body, so it gets with greater efficiency into the bloodstream and eventually into the brain. We've got a very good formulation we've selected, and we've selected a second species for toxicology. So government regulatory authorities tell you you need two species for toxicology. We've selected our second species. So now we have two very different species. One of them is close to man, to test high quantities of the drug, which is why we're making tens of kilograms. And we've done some early work in those species, both of them, and they're both looking very good for the toxicology work that'll start early in the new year. On the commercial protection side, we've been granted a patent in Korea, which is itself a large market, actually, and a sophisticated healthcare market. But really, one of the last pieces of the jigsaw for global coverage. We already have granted patents in Europe to 2038 and granted patents in the United States to 2039. So this is one of the last pieces of the jigsaw. There's one more to come. I'll come to that in questions of global coverage, which is composition of matter. Composition of matter patents do matter. They matter because they're the strongest form of patent cover you can ever get for any pharmaceutical product. And that's the type of patent that we had granted in Korea during the period. And Ed Ward joined us, nominated by Northern Standard Limited, a major shareholder of ours, in the year during the period as a non-executive director. And we're very happy to welcome Ed onto the board. Post-period then, from September to now, the half kilo ahead of time, it's outperforming expectations. The work with our team, our consultants, and our provider is currently outperforming expectations of delivery and of budget, actually. So we're in good shape from getting the job done on time and indeed on target financially. We've started as well the clinical grade material. So the materials we've been making so far are for experimental use for toxicology, for example. The clinical grade material has to perform to an even higher standard because it's eventually going to be given to people like you and me, to man. So that's called GMP, and the GMP material manufacture is underway. It takes a little bit longer because of the higher standards you have to adhere to. And we started that on time, on target. I'll now hand over to Tony here, who's on my left, to talk a little bit about the financial performance during the period. Over to you, Tony.
Thank you, Hugh. And as you now, the team has updated you on the progress of the company, especially, you know, led by the Orexin-1 program. I think it's important, you know, for us to give you an update. You know, what does it look like in our financials and in our numbers? So post-tax loss, 1.3 million, only 100,000 more than in the previous period, reflecting how we already stressed how we are very capital efficient, despite we are accelerating the Orexin-1 program. And in terms of cash outflow from operations, same, 1.3 million, up 100,000 from the previous period. So we are very mindful of our cash. And then we put a second line here also to reflect the cash used in operations, including the change in working capital and the R&D tax credit that we received recently. It's around 400,000 from the HMRC. So 700,000 is really the total of cash used in operations, including changes in working capital and the tax received. So cash balances. So reminding you that we did in the previous period a fundraise of 4.25 million to accelerate the Orexin-1 program. And here at the end of the period, our cash balances are 3.5 million. About three times more than in the previous period, 1.2 million. So we're in a strong cash position. And with that, we also reiterate our unchanged guidance. So we are currently funded until the end of 2026 and until the clinic readiness of the Orexin-1 program. And how does that compare us to our peers on the European listed biotech companies? We maintain here in the top 20% in terms of the cash runway measured in months in length. So we are very happy to be in a very, very strong position to continue accelerating the program and deliver shareholder value to you.
Thanks, Tony. We made a point about near and long-term news flow. So Helen's now going to take us through what's coming for you as investors in the news flow forecast.
So again, just to reflect on this year, and I don't want to downplay any of the amazing progress that's been made this year with the upcoming news flow, but I also want to get you as excited, just as excited as we are, about what the early 2026 is going to bring us. We, from drawing down our funding to tendering to contracting to delivering on the initiation of the scale-up of orexin, we have delivered fantastic progress, and the team has been amazing throughout this year. But we have some really critical milestones coming up towards the end of this year, the beginning of 2026. We continue with the manufacturing scale-up of our drug substance, and we believe that the manufacture of the 10-kilo batch will be completed towards the end of the year, beginning of 2026, on schedule. And the team at Pharmaron has made amazing progress in improving efficiency of that production and generating that amount of material. It's no mean feat to go from tiny quantities, you know, the sort of packets of sugar, as Hugh likes to say, that you stir in your coffee, to really large bags of material. So we are then using that material and turning it into the formulation required for toxicology studies. But during that process, as we mentioned, we're making clinical grade material to be available for any clinical activity, and that will be ongoing from now until quarter two in 2026. The material that we've already made, which is that half a kilo batch, is in formulation right now, and that will be used to explore the dose ranges that will need to go into those 28-day tox studies. And now this is very important because we put in high doses in those studies so that we can see what window we have of tolerability. So we often talk about things like therapeutic index. And what you want is a wide gap between the amount of drug that a person has to take to be effective for their condition over the amount of drug that they would start seeing side effects. And at the moment, an issue for us actually, which is a good thing, is that we believe there's going to be a very large window of therapeutic index or window, and that means we have to put a lot of material into these studies, hence why we're scaling up to 10 kilos. But after that MTD and what's called DRF or dose range finding studies that we'll read out at the end of quarter two, we'll have a firm handle on the doses that we'll be taking forward into the 28-day tox studies. Those 28-day tox studies will be initiated quarter one, and we'll complete around quarter two, three time. And this is where you give repeat dosing of your product and you see if there is any potential sort of accumulation of issues. And that might be in a cardiac liability, it might be a liver toxicity issue or any other issue. Now, from the data that we have achieved to date, we believe this looks like potentially a very clean compound. So we have confidence going forward into these 28-day tox, but this will give us the data that we need to submit to any authorities that will give us the approval to go into the clinic. So around quarter three, that will be the culmination of all of those data packages that we'll put into what's called an IB, investigator brochure, that you can share with authorities that give you permission to go into man. And as we've reiterated before, we'll have that quarter three, quarter four, 2026 will be in the position, we believe, with an approval for taking into healthy volunteers.
Thanks, Helen. So the investment case then, that effectively, getting to the end now, we've got superb progress very quickly and with great capital efficiency. There's more progress to come to finish the job, and that job finish comes at the first two, three quarters of next year with interim very important milestones on the way. We're very confident about the potential of this agent, very confident about the potential for safety of this agent, and the fact that we're going to get permission to give to man in a relatively short time from now. So we've got this diversified portfolio. We've brought slightly to your attention the other part of the portfolio. That's the fatigue and narcolepsy asset. We have a class leader in the orexin 1 blocker. It blocks a pathway that's fundamental to addictive behaviors, regardless of whatever the patient is focusing on as their addiction of choice. It's making great progress. I can't tell you how pleased we are about the efficiency of the work so far and the great output we've achieved in a short time with a small team and with relatively little money. And we don't think, as Alistair said at the beginning, this is yet reflected in the valuation of the business. We're funded through these key inflection points, And you've seen the news flow forecast, which is the minimum news flow, by the way, that we'll generate over the next period. So we're very focused on delivering shareholder value through this program and others where we can. We're financed to do that, and we're flourishing. The final word on the formal bit of this is the business is flourishing both in terms of its technical progress and its capital efficiency. And I'd really like you to take home those two messages. We've picked a high value asset out of all the things that we could have done, and we've done that very seriously and very deliberately. We believe in the value of that asset. Others do too, from what the discussions we're having in the outside world, and that we're flourishing in terms of the progress we're making with that asset. So that's the end of the formal part of the presentation, a little longer than usual, because we really wanted you to understand the value of this business and the progress it's made in the short 6 months to the end of September and the month or so after that. So we'll take questions now. We've got some pre-submitted and we've got some live questions, and we'll deal with those as they come. So this question about the patent in Korea that we did spend a bit of time on, how does it expand commercial opportunity and are there remaining jurisdictions? Well, Helen runs the patent estate, so I'll let you take that one, Helen.
Okay, so there is one remaining jurisdiction still to grant, but we have had notice that it should grant imminently, but that's been a while now. I actually had a conversation with our patent attorneys the other day, and it's Canada. Apparently they're being slow for everyone, but that will give us broad depth of coverage. Our main focus really is US market for addiction. That is the largest market opportunity, and we already have grants there. But it's always good to go where your other second, third commercial opportunities are. So we have that European coverage. You know, traditionally in biotech, it's always good to get things like South Korea, Japan, other Asian territories, because they are big markets in themselves. So, you know, that's the strategy we've done with this patent portfolio. And it's really sort of coming to completion now. And it's then maintaining that and looking for other opportunities where we could extend IP coverage throughout the development program that we're currently doing.
Thanks for that. We've got one here about if you're so enthused about the possibilities, are you buying more shares? We've been in a closed period until this morning, as you can imagine. Every member of this group and every member of management have put their own money into this company, into the tens of thousands. Mine runs into the hundreds of thousands in this company. So we, yes, we have backed it with our own cash. Alistair here has taken his year's fees in shares, not in cash, as our incoming chairman, and has also invested his own cash on top of taking his fees in shares. So yes, we're heavily, heavily motivated by our stock price and our valuation, and we're frankly a little frustrated that we're not seeing the value yet that this program has generated, even in the last 6 months to the end of September. So yeah, we are enthused, and we have put our own skin in the game to very substantial amounts, frankly.
And just to add to that, Hugh, if I might, and I'd be more than happy to invest further. That's not in question. I mean, Hugh's given the obvious formal closed period explanation, but there are obviously ongoing, for example, commercial conversations around potential licensing with partners. And if we are in the middle of any of those conversations, you know, and we bought shares and ultimately a deal was struck, we would look, you know, I suspect we would be in trouble. So I think you need to be aware that we are constantly working on potential deals and so forth that may make it difficult for us, even though we're not in a formal closed period. But I, you know, I obviously believe every word of what we've just described to you in terms of the investment case. And when there's an opportunity, I'll be more than happy to buy some more shares.
Thanks for that, Alistair. There's a two-part question here that's been asked before by the same person, but we'll answer it again. The second part is about money. You know, how much are you drawing in salary? That's public. Just look at the annual report. If you also look at Simply Wall Street, you'll see an analysis of my take from the company, which is well below average for our sector. There's a recent survey that we use to benchmark, and all our salaries are below sector average because we've shifted our remuneration strategy into share-based payments to align ourselves really tightly with the shareholder group. We believe in this asset. We believe that there is money to be made out of this asset. We've put our own money in, and we're not taking as much as the rest of the market out of the business as salaries. We're not rich individuals. We have mortgages to pay and all the normal things. So there has to be a level of salary. But I can tell you, and you can look it up for yourselves, that that level of salary is below average and balanced in share-based instruments to make sure that we are as aligned as possible while doing the day job with the value accretion that we seek to get out of this company.
It might just be worth adding, because I know it's been sort of highlighted before, about our LTIP share scheme, which, you know, Tony, along with our broker, generated a new LTIP when we closed the last financing round, and it was totally driven by share price accretion. So as of yet, we've had no, I guess, what's the word, vestings of those?
Reward in that sense.
Reward in that
Exactly.
sense, but that's
Yeah.
how sort of aligned we
Exactly.
are with trying to get value for the business and our shareholders.
We only get our options when we get 10x value accretion. That was published when we issued the LTIP. So just to reinforce that, you know, we really do believe in alignment, and we really do believe in the asset. And we put our money in, and any money we make out of it, just like ordinary shareholders, is heavily dependent on that value growing. There's another one, expansion of OX1 into other disorders such as OUD. Is there scope for non-dilutive grant funding? Yes, there is. It's difficult at the moment given the geopolitics that are around, particularly in the US, where there is the majority of grant funding for these kind of assets. We know of one competitor that's in a US grant, but that was granted before the current, shall we say, disruptive element of US grant funding the world. There's EIC, VCT. So we are looking all the time at non-dilutive funding sources. Historically, Helen and I in particular have got a good track record of developing non-dilutive funding. We've got one for our legacy asset, for example. So yeah, we are looking at it. Thanks for the question. So geopolitics is in the way, but there are other grants potentially available. Just trying to close off then on how much funding would be required to pursue phase one studies yourself. Well, we're looking at that at the moment. We're planning phase one, as you'd expect, when we're through this period, and phase one will either be done in partnership or by ourselves. And those planning discussions, including the country that we should do the phase one study in, are currently subject to the management team planning. So we're designing the protocols now, and we're looking very shortly for quotes for phase one. Can't give you a hard number yet, but I think you'll expect to see our reputation for capital efficiency and getting a lot done for a little to continue there if we do it solo, or we may well do an early partnership, and then we do it in partnership to be discussed. No firm answer for that as yet. Okay, a couple of legacy questions then. On sulforaphane, it has an effect on the NRF2 pathway. Is there an out-licensing opportunity? Yes. We're constantly looking for out-licensing opportunities for the whole portfolio. As yet, there is nothing firm over and above Stalicla, which is another question coming in. I'll deal with that one now. We did do a deal with Stalicla. We believe we delivered our part of the second milestone for that. And on the honest answer is Stalicla are still raising money. They have been raising money constantly since the dispute, and they haven't yet concluded that fundraise. And so I think any resolution of that dispute will be tightly tied into our partners' fundraising activities. We're still working on ways internally to get round the dispute. We believe we're in the right, and we'll, of course, update everybody as soon as there's anything else to say on that one. So that covers a couple of them.
Maybe to add on that, in our cash runway and our cash balances, of course, we do not account for any future milestones. So our cash runway until the end of next year is without any potential milestones from Stalicla or from anybody else.
A question that had come up in line with the salary question that we clearly try and answer every single question that comes up on these is, you know, why bring OX1 to the fore and SFX01 to the background? I hope we've covered that for you. and it's clearly about a combination of technical risk and the priors at the end. And when you look at all those things in a detailed strategic matrix, OX1 wins. It wins as the best investment opportunity that we currently have in this business and a near-term investment for monetization. So we looked at it seriously, sincerely, and sweat a lot over these big decisions, because pivoting is never something you should do trivially. And we did that at the early part of this year with Alistair's joining the board, and we, so far, it's gone to plan. We were right to pivot that. What we've done with SFX01 and the legacy program is get grant funding for it, back to the non-dilutive funding question earlier. If you're doing very high-risk research, which glioblastoma is, you get somebody else to pay for it. So therefore, the capital drain from shareholders' funds is not relevant to that program. We've put all the capital, or a very large proportion of it, Tony can correct me, on the OX1 program, and very much so far so good.
Just to add to that, Hugh, that strategic focus on what can actually deliver the best value for the company and the shareholders, that driven by me and the management team when I joined, that was absolutely the right thing to do. It would be absurd to spend a pound of shareholders' money on SFX01 when we have the Orexin program at the stage it's at with the opportunities that it presents. So that is the position that we set out in spring of this year. And just to give you an independent, non-exec view on progress, I know the management team has said how excellent that progress is. That is absolutely the case. We sat through a board meeting last week, rarely do these developments follow time, schedule, and budget. But in fact, we're ahead of schedule and slightly behind budget. So it has been an excellent delivery of a new strategy that we've put in place in spring of this year.
Thanks, Alistair. Just a couple more questions then. There's some pre-submitted ones too. I hope you get the person who asked the question about SFX01 resolution, that where we are tied up with the Stalicla fundraise. We'll give you, as soon as we know, we'll tell you anything that there is to say. An outline design for phase one, back to Orexin, a priority program. We're delivering at the moment through the medical group and the ClinOps group, which are one person each, by the way, back to capital efficiency, the design for the phase one. It looks like it's going to be pretty standard, which is good news. There are no difficult or special conditions needed for phase one for the Orexin 1 blocker. It's going to be called SAD and MAD, that single ascending dose, multiple ascending dose in volunteers. We are looking carefully at whether there's any other things. We'll be looking carefully for sedation, actually, because other members, inferior members of this class of Orexin blocker, have shown sedation. Because we're the most selective ever discovered, the chance of sedation is almost as near zero as matters. But we look for it just to prove that it's not there. Proving negative is quite difficult, but we'll be looking for it. And looking for sedation is pretty much the only special condition in that phase one outline design. So a couple of other questions we hope we've dealt with. Biotech stocks are high risk. How should investors look at these? And I'll turn back to Alistair maybe for that one again, because he's the newest risk taker in this group.
I think we've covered that. I hope we've covered that well in the presentation. I think very, very often a misconception is that there is only a return to shareholders on a very, very long time scale in biotech. That isn't the case. There's many examples, both of companies that we've all been involved with and other completely independent companies where, value is delivered to shareholders by delivering key developmental milestones, which are recognized by potential partners through commercial deals, recognized by the market, and that should drive shareholder value. That is what we are striving for. That is what we're all aligned with, as Hugh said. So you definitely should not have the view that biotech is, and you hear it quite often on the bulletin boards, but it just isn't true, that the biotech is a jam tomorrow story. There are multiple milestones in the early part of next year and throughout next year where we really ought to be able to deliver some return for shareholders.
And another one, just to make sure we've dealt with everything. The last question that we have currently, unless anybody else wants to quickly type, is the GLP-1, the Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro world. Helen dealt with it ahead of the game, actually, in her brief section. And there is anecdotal evidence, and there are some clinical plans ongoing on the GLP-1s in substance use disorders. So two perspectives here. Binge eaters are not all fat. They do not seek to lose weight. They manage their binge eating with excessive exercise, purging, being throwing it up afterwards, or long periods between binge episodes. What we would seek to do with OX1 is just to switch off the impulse to binge in the first place in a non-obese population. So that's good. And we expect the side effect profile of OX1 to be significantly better. You will not have visual disturbances. You will not have pancreatitis. You will not have nausea or constipation as likely side effects from our OX1 blocker. Those will all come out in clinical trials, of course, if there is any, more likely the absence of them. And so it'll be a cleaner but complementary approach to GLP-1. If people are obese, wish to lose weight and reduce impulsivity, there's no reason that eventually these two drugs can't be given together to create a synergistic effect between impulse reduction and weight reduction in those few patients who require both. So hopefully that covers the GLP-1 question that comes up fairly frequently. It's unproven yet on the GLP-1s as to whether it'll work in substance abuse. No reason we can't use both together. So that now, I think, Alex, concludes the formal part of the presentation. And I believe we've dealt with every question that's been posed to us in this session. There's one more. Yeah. Okay, you mentioned increasing shareholder value primarily via licensing deals. Are you open to a full buyout of the company or certain assets? I think as biotech professionals in a small cap biotech, we are always open to all options. That is a single product deal, which we've done previously for SFX01, as a multi-product deal, or indeed as a full takeout. I think the board would weigh that at that time, that happy time. It's a very high-class problem to have. There is an active market, as Alistair outlined in the beginning, for neuropsychiatry in particular, and a big deal flow in neuropsychiatry now that wasn't there even a handful of years ago. So the answer to the last question coming up is yes, we have to be open to all approaches that improve shareholder value. It's what we're about, it's what we've aligned our compensation with, and it's what our day job is, to grow shareholder value. If that's the right thing for shareholder value, we'll do whatever deal comes our way, or the deals that we're currently looking to pull off proactively, because the process is quite a long one and we're engaging, as you'd expect, with the right audiences currently in all the partnering meetings and outside of those.
That's great, Hugh, and the rest of the team. If I may just jump back in there, as you have addressed all the questions from investors today. Oh, but Hugh, before I redirect investors to provide you with their feedback, which I know is particularly important to the company, could I please just ask you for a few closing comments?
Thanks, Alex. Yes, we've dwelt on it. We've repeated the message, and the message is we are capital efficient. We've pivoted. We've backed a major asset with major potential, and we're going very well with that asset. We are better than on target currently after our strategic refocus in the first quarter of this year. So I just really do want everybody to understand the enthusiasm and the sense of pride we've got really about the progress that we've made in a relatively short period for a relatively small amount of money. Capital efficient, going well. Alistair, any further things from you?
No, I think that's exactly it. We took a very sanguine, pragmatic view of how to drive value. And we, you know, we came up with a strategy which attracted a significant amount of capital. And as I said, as a completely independent non-exec, I can confirm the progress has been excellent, and we're slightly ahead of schedule in terms of delivering on that.
Fantastic. Thank you all once again for updating investors today. Could I please ask investors not to close this session, as you will now be automatically redirected to provide your feedback in order that the board can better understand your views and expectations. This will only take a few moments to complete, and I'm sure will be greatly valued by the company. On behalf of the management team of Therachrief PLC, we would like to thank you for attending today's presentation, and good morning to you all.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Investor Meet Company. Just a reminder that the presentation this podcast was based on is available in full on our website, where you can watch live company presentations and put your questions to management directly. The best part is, it's free. Our mission is to give retail investors like you the same access and information as institutional investors. Visit investormeetcompany.com today to follow the companies you're interested in.